It's Netflix's surprise hit of the summer, and people are making fun of how whiny and entitled Americans are because of it. But passengers say it was even more harrowing than the show describes, and most were compensated with nothing more than a free future trip. This is the story of the fire that left the Carnival Triumph stranded, why it was nicknamed the Poop Cruise, and what the documentary left out. Hi, friends. I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here. I'm a Midwesterner who now lives in New York City, putting my writing degree to use by researching true crime cases that interest me, and hopefully you. And hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. I love to go to all-inclusive resorts, so people are always telling me I should try a cruise sometime. Usually they frame it as, you can order as many entrees as you want at dinner, which, you know, is not a bad angle. I also, despite having never been on a cruise, have this idea that I might like to be one of those people who sells their home and lives on cruise ships full-time. But then I saw Poop Cruise on Netflix, and it was so fascinating that I needed to know the whole story. As I'm sure you know, some people say cruises are all floating petri dishes, but most cruises don't have passengers literally walking through poo. On February 7, 2013, the 14-story, 900-foot-long Carnival Triumph set sail from its port in Galveston, Texas. The 4,200-plus passengers and crew didn't know that one of the generators on the ship was severely in need of maintenance and that its flexible fuel lines weren't 100% shielded from possible leaks. They were just hoping for 4 days of line dancing, belly flopping, and of course, ordering as many entrees as they wanted at dinner. But 3 days later, on Sunday, February 10th, passengers woke up 150 miles off the coast of their last stop in Cozumel to hear fire alarms sounding. It was 5:30 a.m. Many of them were hungover or just plain exhausted from their previous day in the Mexican sun, and it was supposed to be their last day of the cruise. But now there was a fire in the engine room and smoke in the hallways. It turns out fuel had sprayed from a hose that was only 6 months old, and one of the diesel generators that was in need of maintenance had caught fire. Passengers wearing their Carnival-issued bathrobes shuffled onto the upper decks to see the ship's famous exhaust fin, or whale tail, with smoke pouring out of it. The fire suppression system did its job, and the flames were extinguished, crisis averted. But the thing is, the main power cables had been destroyed. The ship could no longer move. The propulsion system had stopped working, and the Triumph was adrift with no way to control its movements nor get it back to port. The electricity was out, meaning there was no Wi-Fi nor cell service, no lights, no air conditioning, and maybe worst of all, no functioning toilets. The perky cruise director had to tell people that they were allowed to pee in the shower, but they had to poo in red biohazard bags, tie them up, and leave them in their trash bins to be collected. But soon those filthy bags lined the hallway floors, though some passengers were chugging Imodium or clenching their rear ends to avoid using the bathroom. People moved their mattresses out of the hallways and then onto the upper decks, because it was cooler out there, and maybe more importantly, less smelly there. Eventually, they used sheets to create what they called Tent City. On the second day of being stranded, the kitchen staff had to throw away all of the perishable food, leaving very little to eat, certainly nothing hot. So much for ordering all the entrees. One passenger said they ate onion and cucumber sandwiches for dinner one night, and people reported that the lines for that could be 4 hours long. There were also long lines for water, which had to be rationed. Not that you wanted to drink much, since then you'd have to pee in the shower. The ship was in near total darkness aside from some emergency lighting, so one passenger remembered pouring soda over the water-activated beacon on her life jacket to be able to see as she peed. And that was bad enough, but the worst was still to come. By that second day, pee was no longer going down the shower drain. The electric vacuum system that usually sucks up the liquid had stopped functioning, so it was just sitting there in the cabins. Eventually, urine and feces build up to the rim of every public toilet. People said they had to choke away the smell. One chef on the ship likened the scene to poop lasagna, people building up layers of feces, then toilet paper, then feces. One passenger said the smell was so bad, basically 4,200 people's body odor and overflowing poo baking in a sauna, that people started vomiting from it. which of course only added to the smell. Eventually, the toilets filled up so much that when the ship tipped to the side, stuff would slosh out of them. You know what I mean by stuff. Passengers said they had to slip and slide through the greasy, gross, slippery muck of urine and feces. The hallways became toxic, with human waste running down the walls. And of course, with people sleeping in the halls, some of their mattresses got soaked. The one bright spot was that someone discovered a working outlet in a public area, and passengers quickly made a massive chain of power strips so people could charge their devices. Not that they could really do anything without working Wi-Fi. The ship originally tried to keep up the activities for guests, but as people became hungrier and crankier, the staff just opened up the bar for everyone. So then, of course, drunk people started peeing off the side of the ship and throwing their poop bags onto lower decks. And just imagine, with no running water, no one was able to wash their hands. And this is all horrible, but walking on urine-soaked floors isn't going to kill anyone. Passengers said the real terror was wondering if they were even going to make it off the ship alive. They were drifting in the Gulf currents for days with seemingly no plan for being rescued. At times, the Triumph would tip scarily to one side or the other, and people worried that at some point she would fall over completely. You have to remember that the year before, in 2012, the Costa Concordia had hit a rock and rolled onto her side off the coast of an Italian island, and 32 people died in the process. That ship was also owned by Carnival. To make matters worse, passengers reported that the crew wouldn't provide them proper updates about what was happening. One passenger said that the Netflix show made it seem like the staff were communicating way more than they actually did. Carnival was supposedly only allowing a trickle of information about how bad things actually were in the hope of keeping people safe and calm, but it ended up doing the opposite. One Carnival ship actually changed course to offer supplies, and because they weren't getting any details, passengers really thought for a moment that they were being rescued. People on the Triumph recall seeing people on the Legend just dancing on their decks as usual as they gawked at the poop crews. But the one silver lining was that Triumph passengers realized that they were close enough that they could steal the Legend's Wi-Fi, and they started pressing against their railings to get their phones as close to the ship as possible. That was the first time Triumph passengers were able to tell their loved ones and the world what was happening to them.
Picture going days without water, right? Like, being in the Texas heat, right? Days without water, days without food. And when we did have food, it was like this, literally soggy bread with like tomato or whatever they had. You know, we're outside and we don't have sunscreen because we ran out because we packed for 4 days. But picture you have a baby and you only bring a certain amount of formula. So it's a 3 or 4 day cruise. So you probably pack enough formula or insulin for 4 or 5 days to be on the safe side. Well, guess what? People were running out.
One passenger said that when their family couldn't reach them on board, they called the Carnival phone number provided to families, and Carnival said everything was fine, because of course they would. They weren't going to rat themselves out to families or the media. The only official word from Carnival Public Relations was that the propulsion system wasn't working, but the crew was fixing it, and everything possible was being done to keep passengers comfortable. The day before Triumph would finally be rescued, Carnival's president told the media that most of the public restrooms had running water, and some of the guest cabins did too. The lasagna chef begs to differ. Behind the scenes, Carnival first had the idea of transferring passengers to another ship in the middle of the Gulf. In the end, they said they decided this would be too risky. But I also wonder if part of the decision stemmed from the fact that all of the other Carnival ships were in use, so they'd have to, you know, lose out on profits if they paid another cruise line to use one of their ships. So then they were going to try to have the ship towed back to a port in Mexico, but before the tugboats could take over, currents in the Gulf carried the Triumph far enough north that it didn't make sense anymore. Carnival said they were basically as close to the U.S. as to Mexico. Although, now knowing that 900 of the people on board didn't have passports, I wonder if they just didn't want to deal with getting them out of Mexico. Either way, Carnival decided that having tugboats pull the ship to port was really the best option. But of course, tugboats are much slower than cruise ships, so a section of the trip that would usually take 2 or 3 hours was now going to take 7 to 10 hours. And then one of the towing lines snapped, and then a bit on one of the tugs broke. Just more bad luck, and more baggies of poo. But finally, early on Friday, February 15th, passengers were allowed to start disembarking, days after the cruise was supposed to end, in Alabama instead of Texas. People on the ship cheered. Family members cheered. The CEO did a press conference to say, oopsie. Luckily for him, many of the people aboard were choosing to look at the bright side. One man said, no power, no toilets, nothing. Nothing. I mean, it was disgusting, but the staff, they did such an amazing job. They were amazing through it all. I mean, they worked their tails off to accommodate everybody's needs. One passenger said that with the elevators out, it was amazing to see the crew carry people who couldn't walk up and down the stairs. One woman said that young men would wait hours in line to bring elderly people a plate of food. She said there was a lot of incredible humanity on display on that ship. Once at the dock, Carnival had hotel rooms waiting for passengers who wanted to spend the night in New Orleans, or buses waiting for people who needed to get back to Galveston to get their vehicles. The company promised a full refund for the trip, a free flight home, $500, and, of course, a credit to come back on a future Carnival cruise. But according to one passenger, only within the next 2 years. I'd be so curious to see how many people took them up on that. According to one travel expert, that's about all they could expect because travel insurance wouldn't cover them in a case like this. Their trip wasn't technically interrupted, and they weren't technically incurring any additional expenses while on board. Most people just, you know, sucked it up and went on with their lives. But in December 2013, CNN got their hands on documents that showed Triumph was a quote-unquote disaster waiting to happen. When it set sail, only 4 of its 6 generators were operating at full capacity. Carnival knew that the generator that eventually caught fire needed maintenance, and yet they ignored the need. The company knew that it actually had an ongoing problem with its generators being fire hazards on many of their ships. They knew they had fuel line issues on their other ships, especially after the Costa Allegra caught fire the year before because of another fuel leak. Passengers on that ship were left in the middle of the sweltering Indian Ocean without power for 3 days, and Carnival's own internal documents advised that all ships should be inspected for fuel line problems. They had 9 incidents with fuel leaks in only 2 years. Carnival came up with a plan to shield all of its hoses from possible fuel leaks, but they didn't shield the one part of the hose that eventually caused the problem on Triumph. Still, one of the Carnival VPs said they were totally in compliance with all rules and regulations, and they couldn't have foreseen the accident. But in 2014, 31 passengers sued Carnival in a civil trial, saying that what happened was the company's fault and that they were owed money for what they endured. Carnival Corp, of course, pushed back on how mentally and physically damaged passengers could actually be, and if those effects could really still be felt a year later. What was interesting was that before the trial even started, the judge ruled that Carnival had been negligent and was responsible for the fire on board the ship. It wasn't even a question. But what shocks me is that the judge ruled that Carnival didn't break its contract with passengers because they never promised a safe and sanitary trip. When people bought tickets to sail on Carnival ships, the terms and conditions explicitly said that the company made no express guarantee for safe passage, a seaworthy vessel, adequate and wholesome food, and sanitary and safe living conditions. And I think a lot of us sign contracts like this all the time without thinking about it. I know when I go scuba diving, I'm always signing papers that basically say there's a real risk that I may die and that the dive operator can't be held responsible. But I think most of us think, well, but obviously a company will be held responsible if they knowingly do something that results in poo running down the hallway walls. But nope, the judge said that these passengers knew what they were getting into with Carnival and couldn't seek damages just because they had a bad time. They had to prove that they were actually injured due to misconduct on the part of the company. One 74-year-old grandma testified that she couldn't block out the bad memories of the stench and the fear that the ship would turn over completely and sink. She said her husband had to go days without his diabetes medication and that he had to climb slippery stairs on his bad leg because the elevators weren't working. He fell down those stairs once. One woman who was cruising with her mom testified, Carnival Cruise did not give one flip about the passengers on that ship. They did not do their best. The judge asked her what they should have done, and the passenger said, if they knew something was wrong, they should never have left the dock. One lawyer for the passengers requested $30,000 to $1 million each, depending on the level of their injuries. The lawyer for Carnival said many of the passengers didn't even seek medical care, that none should get more than $50,000, and that a number of them should get nothing. In the end, most of the injured passengers settled confidentially, so we'll never know what those people were paid. Three passengers are said to have gotten $15,000 each, but everyone else got less than $5,000. Probably not even enough to cover their legal fees and travel expenses. Today, with repairs complete, the ship has been fitted with new emergency systems that will allow more services to run on backup power. Operating redundancies will ensure that the boat would still, you know, move and have lights, even in the case of a generator fire. After an overhaul costing $115 million and a whole lot of cleaning, Carnival Triumph is now cruising the high seas once again under the name Carnival Sunrise. They've removed that caveat from their ticket about how they don't promise a safe, sanitary trip with any food. Some of the passengers from Triumph said the documentary makes light of what was a deeply traumatic experience for them. It didn't show all the people who got food poisoning from gray lobster. It didn't show how passengers were ordered to take their mattresses back to their rooms so the TV cameras couldn't see them sleeping outside. It didn't show how in the hours before they docked in Alabama, generators and food were delivered to the ship to make it look like everything had been just fine. So I obviously had to go to Twitter and see what people were saying about the Poop Cruise documentary, and it surprised me how many people are blaming the passengers for being babies. Lots of, "these people are so whiny," and "it was only a few days," and calling the women who were there for a bachelorette getaway alcoholics because they wanted to have some margaritas. I'm not saying we shouldn't call out entitled Americans, but cruises aren't cheap. And I'm pretty sure the very least of what we should expect from a corporation making a net income of almost $2 billion last year is that they don't have literal feces running down the walls of their ship. It's not like this was something they had no control over. They sold tickets to this cruise knowing that the ship was breaking down. But thanks to the Triumph disaster, the cruise passenger Bill of Rights was drafted in 2013 and adopted by the world's leading cruise lines. It outlines 10 rules that the companies agreed to abide by, such as the right to emergency power if the main generators go out, and the right of passengers to disembark a ship at port if food, water, and restroom facilities aren't provided. And of course, the right to a full refund if the trip is canceled due to mechanical failure. So, is that enough for you? If you love cruises, would the Poop Cruise make you feel any differently? And if you've never cruised before, would you now? Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.